Hello, patrons, and welcome to Underwood and Flinch Underground, episode 10, which is now two episodes longer than Blood and Smoke. It's got a much higher word count, and it was delivered to you in a fraction of the time that Blood and Smoke was. That's because you, my friends, are sponsoring me here on Patreon. This book simply would not exist without you. And indeed, none of the podcasts that I'm producing at the moment would exist were it not for you and your patronage here. So, my huge thanks to you for supporting me, for supporting Underwood and Flinch, and indeed for supporting everything I do here at Patreon and elsewhere. You are awesome. Yes, yes, huzzah! Ha ha ha! Now, speaking of those other podcasts, obviously there's the classic sort of story podcast, the occasional Patreon cast. Those two have kind of become fused in a way that I didn't intend them to do, actually, the Patreon cast and the classic story podcast. I'm going to have to defuse them, I think, and make Patreon cast a separate podcast to the classic story podcast. But that's all, you know, to come. Anyway, in my public feed, we have the Something for the Weekend podcast, which I hope you've noticed. This is my way of hopefully getting myself into the ears of new listeners. I've been neglecting my public feed, you see. As you know, at one point I was even talking about dropping it altogether. But this is not the right way to go, is it? My job is to write and record and to get stuff out to as large an audience as I possibly can, to get myself into as many ears as I can. And the only way to do that is by getting a regular podcast out to the world. For only then, when my audience grows, can Underwood and Flinch be discovered by the TV company that's going to make an awesome TV series out of it one day. To reclaim the vampire fiction crown from pap like Twilight and rescue the whole vampire genre from the pukesome world of teenage TV and bring the vampire crown back to a story that jolly well deserves it. And that is, of course, Underwood and Flinch. We don't need young, good-looking, hunky men and young, good-looking, curvaceous ladies. What we need is the likes of Underwood and David, Underwood and Arthur, Lydia and the Black Circle, and all the rest of our friends in the Underwood and Flinch universe. This is what it should be about, isn't it? This needs to be the number one vampire series on Earth. And in order to get there, well, that's why I'm putting out the free weekly podcast that's actually not about vampires at all. But it is free, and it is regular. So, that's something, isn't it? Now, right now you're probably thinking what I'm thinking. That being, why don't you do a podcast about vampires, Mike? Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it? I mean, it's niche, isn't it? It's very niche. But it is a busy niche, isn't it? You know the sort of podcasts I'm talking about where you've got teenagers talking about vampire shows like Vampire Diaries and True Blood and the Twilight Saga. And they talk about it for like an hour. Yeah, I can't do that, really. I have nothing to say about the genre or the state of the genre in general. It's of no interest to me at all. I'm very much in my own universe and all that stuff goes on the outside. For me, there's Dracula and there's Hammer movies from the 60s and 70s. And that's about it for me. I did enjoy Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire, read that years ago, and Stephen King's Salem's Lot, which I read even longer ago. And I hugely enjoyed the 1979 TV version of Salem's Lot. I thought that was absolutely fabulous, and I still watch it maybe once a year. There is nothing in the history of horror which, for me, is more scary than some of the scenes in the 79 version of Salem's Lot. And the joy of James Mason as Mr. Barlow. Was he Barlow? No, Mr. Straker, wasn't he? He was Mr. Straker. You'll enjoy the master, and he'll enjoy you. that was fabulous. But anyway, sorry, getting off topic. I could talk about that for an hour, but not for an hour every week for the rest of my life. But still, do subscribe to my feed to get the Something for the Weekend podcast. It's just a short show most weeks with me chatting about random things, quirky things in the news, TV news, movie news. Does that sound like the kind of podcast that you could listen to? Hello, who could that be? Hello?
I'll only say this once. No.
Of course. Well, you can't please everybody, can you? Anyway, And so, to Underwood and Flinch Underground, Episode 10. Last time, we followed Damo as he hid away from the daylight hours by sleeping on trains in the London Underground system. His pleasant dreams, or maybe not pleasant dreams, were interrupted by a woman, an attractive, if rather dirty and smelly lady, who ultimately revealed herself to be Lady Rosamund Underwood. Now, just in case you weren't taking notes when you were listening to Blood and Smoke, Lady Rosamund Underwood was a character in that story. You only ever heard her as a background character when Underwood and Arthur weren't recording their tapes, or as a regular subject of conversation between the two men. But all the time, she was there, regularly heard or regularly referenced. Now, as the curtain rises once again on Underwood and Flinch Underground, I invite you to meet the lady herself. Underwood and Flinch Underground. A novel written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Episode 10. The train stopped, the doors opened, and the waiting passengers outside streamed around them into the empty carriage, settling quickly and returning to their phones and evening papers. Damo, who had at first been too stunned for words, now managed to whisper,
You mean you're a vampire?
She smiled. What do your senses tell you?
My senses? If you're asking me if you're making my head spin and my guts go for a tumble, then yeah, you are. Does that count?
What you feel is a combination of reactions, she said, amused. You sense me on an animal level, but I am pushing you perhaps too hard. You feel fear also. You sense a threat, but you cannot escape.
What? What do you mean fear? I ain't afraid of you, your ladyship.
Please, call me Rose. And yes, you are afraid, and so you should be. I am far more powerful than you. You are a fledgling, yes, newly turned? Where is your master? Damo shoved past her and stepped out into the centre of the carriage. He grabbed the overhead handrail and turned back to her. There was no one close by, but he kept his voice low as he replied.
Now look here, missus, I ain't got no master but myself, right? And as for which of us is the more feckin' powerful, all I can say is I've bounced more fucking doors in my days than you've had hot dinners, so don't try me.
I suspect I may have had considerably more hot dinners than you have bounced... What did you say? Bounced doors? What is that?
I'm a bouncer, a doorman in nightclubs and the like, you know? I chuck people out.
She laughed.
You are the hard man, yes? Someone I should not mess with.
Yeah, he nodded. That's about the size of it.
The train slowed to its next stop, Waterloo Station.
Very well, then.
She turned her back to him so she was facing the doors.
I'm sorry to have troubled you.
The doors opened, and before Damo could react, she stepped off the train and out through the brief parting in the wall of waiting passengers. Damo gawped for a moment, wondering what to do. Then the passengers outside began to come in. Through the windows, he caught a glimpse of Rose moving away along the platform before she was swallowed into the crowd.
Shit!
He cursed and pushed forwards through the incoming flow of people, muttering apologies as he went. He hurried along the platform in the direction he had last seen her heading, turning into a passenger tunnel and rounding a corner. Then he saw her up ahead, rising above the crowd on an escalator. He went after her. She stood to the right-hand side of the escalator, riding as opposed to scaling the steps and reading the ads on the walls as she glided by them. Damo went to the left, the side kept clear for those in a hurry, and scaled for all he was worth. When he reached her, he stopped and stepped into the right in front of her.
Hello again, she said with a smile. Damo, panting slightly, nodded a hello and said,
"Look, I didn't mean I didn't want to talk to you or nothing. I was just, you know, asserting myself."
"And you often feel the need to assert yourself around women?"
"No," he said, then leaned closer and whispered, "but I do feel the need to assert myself around vampires."
She nodded, understanding.
"Ah, so I am right. You are a fledgling."
He pulled a face.
"That makes me sound like some stupid kind of baby duck.
But yeah, I suppose basically that's what I am."
She laughed.
"A stupid baby duck. That is cute. You are funny. It is a shame you don't like me, because I do like you."
They got off the escalator and she steered them out of the stream of people to a spot at the side of the concourse.
"And so," she said, turning to him and looking him up and down, "you are a fledgling, and yet you have no master. Why is that?"
"I don't know," Damo shrugged. "Should I have a master?"
"Well, who made you? Who turned you from human to what you are now?"
"A woman."
"A woman? You knew her, I presume?"
"Well, sorta," he said, then added, "but I knew her as a person, not as a vampire."
Rose frowned.
"I don't understand. She was a lover of yours, yes?"
"Ah, no, she was just this bird I knew in Spain. She was going to attack her brother, like, you know, as a vampire, but I stepped in and saved him, like, so she did me instead."
"She did you? What do you mean by this?"
"Well, she bit me, like, you know, drank me blood. Next thing I knew, I was waking up at a feckin' morgue."
No, she shook her head. "There is something else, yes? You miss something?"
Damo was confused.
"Miss something? Like what?"
"You fed on her also, yes? You drank her blood?"
Damo struggled to think back. The memory of being in Lydia's arms was hazy at best. He remembered being incredibly turned on, a sense of euphoria. Even thinking about it now gave him a tingle in his loins.
No, I didn't drink her blood. But
what?
I could taste blood. I remember tasting blood and liking it. I wanted more. It was on her neck. I was kissing her neck and there was blood on it."
"Her blood?"
"I don't know. No, wait. Sergei said she'd been drinking Underwood's blood. It was all down her neck where she'd spilt it."
He stopped. Rose was looking at him like he'd just slapped her.
"What's the matter?"
he asked.
"Underwood's blood?"
"Yeah, you know him, Roy. You said you're Lady Underwood. Oh, I'm sorry, I was so gobsmacked by the fact that you were a vampire, I forgot to ask. Does that make you his missus?"
She spoke falteringly, like she was in shock.
"Yes, but he's... They told me he was missing. Presumed dead."
"Who did?"
"The lawyers. Daventry and West, they received a message from Flinch."
"Wait a minute," said Damo. "You're saying Flinch says Underwood's missing? When did you hear that?"
1944.
Damo suddenly understood that they were not on quite the same page.
"You mean in World War II? Jesus. So when you say Flinch, you mean David's dad. What's his name? Arthur Flinch."
"Oh, yes."
She grimaced at the mention of the name.
"That awful man. How many times I wished him dead, I don't know. And yet he was the one who survived and not..."
She seemed to focus then, emerging from the past, to take Damo by the hand.
"But you say Daniel, Lord Underwood, is alive? That he made this woman who made you?"
"Well, it's pretty complicated, but yeah, basically. We were all caught up in a shootout with these Russian mafia types in Malaga, and Underwood got there before us, and, well, he was shot up pretty bad, apparently. But he must have got out of there in one piece, because all his stuff from Spain is now being moved over to London. And as for the woman who made me, well, she wasn't his doing. I mean, he didn't bite her. But like I say, she did drink his blood. So is that how it happens? I licked the blood on her neck, and she drank his blood, so..."
"Stop talking," Rose snapped. "You said Underwood is coming to London?"
"Well, I didn't say that exactly. I said his stuff is coming to London. I'm only assuming he's coming with it because he ain't at the Spanish house anymore. And neither is Flinch. I mean, why else would they be sending all the stuff if they weren't planning on coming over and all?
She looked away to where the endless stream of passengers rose into view at the top of the escalator.
So, Underwood is alive. Many times I thought I felt him in the years after the war. I used to call at his houses all over London, seeking him out, but he was never there. I'd call the lawyers, but they would only ever repeat that he was gone, and that I had to move on and accept his loss. And all that time, they were lying.
She shook her head.
But why am I surprised? They are lawyers, Satanists. How can one possibly expect truth from such men?
Gradually, the feelings of Daniel's presence in the city faded away, and I began to wonder if I had simply been mistaken, that what I had felt was the last yearnings of my love for him.
She turned back to Damo, her eyes sparkling with welled tears.
But now you say he has been in Spain?
Yeah, he's been sleeping there for the last 50 years, apparently.
She nodded.
That would explain it. And so, now he is risen and getting into trouble with his dog, Flinch, again. Some things never change. Who is it this time? His dog.
You mean Flinch? That's a guy called David, Arthur's youngest son.
A chip of the rotten old block by the sound of it.
Damo shrugged.
Oh, I dunno. He's all right. Unlike his sister, she's the one who made me into this.
Rose, who had been dabbing her eyes with a tissue, looked up in surprise.
Arthur's daughter, a vampire?
She gave a laugh.
Oh, this is a break with tradition.
Yeah, but like we said, it wasn't Underwood's idea. She drank his blood, but he didn't give it to her.
And so, what has become of her? Is she still alive?
I dunno. Last I saw her, she was killing me. Next thing I know, I'm waking up in the morgue, freezing cold and craving something I didn't understand till after I'd taken it.
You mean you fed?
Yeah. I killed a bloke. I didn't know what I was doing.
She nodded.
It is the way. She took his hand. And you are cold now. You are hungry, yes?
Yeah, but you say I'm cold. He released her grip and rubbed his hands briskly together. You're feckin' freezing. When's the last time you fed?
It was some time ago. I had nothing last night. I was on my way home this morning when I came upon you.
She smiled. I suppose you were more interesting to me than my next meal.
But aren't you, like, tearing to get your teeth into someone? You must be feckin' ravenous.
Oh, the hunger can be managed. You will learn this in time. But what about you? This is more important. When was the last time that you ate?
His lips tightened as he recalled his last meal, the priest. He looked down, ashamed.
I suppose it must be about 20 hours or so now.
And what about the victim? You killed him?
He nodded. As his eyes were downcast, he didn't see her roll her eyes at the news. She took him gently by the shoulders and said,
"Listen, what did you do with the body?"
He looked up. Her expression was intense, serious. He shrugged.
"I left it there, where he killed him."
"Which was?"
"A church. It was..."
He stopped, as quite suddenly she walked away from him, cutting across the flow of the crowd to a dump bin of free evening newspapers. She picked up the top copy and read the front page. Then she turned to him. He didn't like the look on her face. She came back and thrust the paper at him.
"Congratulations, my little duck. You made the front page."
Damo took the paper. The large headline was just one word. Slaughtered. The subheading beneath it cried, "Two murdered in vampire slayings." Underneath was a photograph of the priest he'd killed. He was pictured with a young couple, smiling and holding a baby. It looked like it had been taken at a christening ceremony.
"Two murdered," said Rose. "Who was the other one? Your previous meal?"
Damo shook his head, reading.
"No, I only did the priest. God forgive me."
"What? Then who?"
"I don't know. I'm trying to read, aren't I?
Give us a minute, will you? He speed-read through the article, following the story onto page 3, where there were pictures of a cordoned-off crime scene in Camden. She came around and looked at the paper with him.
This is not a church.
I know, it's the other one. And this is the one you say was not you.
That's right, he said emphatically. I ain't been nowhere near Camden. Look, just let me read it, will you?
He read on.
It says a woman was found naked in a skip with multiple stab wounds to the body and neck.
And your victim?
It just says the priest had his throat cut. But that's not true. I didn't cut his throat. I bit it.
Well, then where did they get this vampire slayings from?
You just hang on, your ladyship. I'm reading it.
Damo scanned the story further, his finger tracing the lines until it stopped.
Here.
He tapped the text for Rose to see and quoted,
when asked if the murders were connected in any way, Detective Superintendent Coleridge refused to comment, saying it was too early to draw any conclusions. However, later this afternoon, a source close to the investigation revealed that in both cases, the victims died as a result of being bled to death. And, well, then it just goes on into a load of speculation.
He handed her the paper.
Speculation is what they do when they have few facts to go on, said Rose. Who is this source? Just an invention.
Well, hang on. Now, we know that the one I did was certainly a vampire killing. So how do we know that the other one wasn't?
Because you didn't do it, and I didn't do it. The chances of another vampire being in London, killing without...
Her words trailed off as a thought occurred to her. Then she said, almost in a whisper,
unless...
Damo nodded.
Yeah, unless Underwood's arrived.
No, she shook her head. He would never be so sloppy. This was one of the first things he taught me. He could never have left such a mess behind.
Unless he wanted to. Did you think of that? Maybe this is part of some plan of his.
Don't be ridiculous, said Rose, swatting the proffered paper aside. You clearly don't know Daniel Underwood at all. This other murder is unconnected. She was found naked, stabbed. It is the work of a maniac. The journalist makes a connection only to create fear, because fear sells newspapers.
So you think the whole vampire thing is bullshit?
Apart from your little indiscretion, yes. The police are no doubt aware of what happened to the priest, but they would never share this with the media. Such things are highly classified. No, for the journalists, this is all just irresponsible sensationalism. What do you call a killer who drains his victim's blood? A vampire, yes? For them, it is just a nickname for a killer and a headline to sell papers, nothing more. However, it will sell papers. And tomorrow it will be all over the national papers also. Oh, and the internet. Scheiße. No good will come of this. Ugh.
She turned and walked a few steps from him, giving him her back.
Look, said Damo. It's not my fault, Rose. You of all people should understand that.
She spun to face him.
I should understand. What? That you're a fool and a liability? Oh, yes, you're right, I do. Jesus, what were you thinking, just leaving the body like that? That maybe God would take him up to heaven, body and soul? No, I... The longer I hung around there, the greater the chances of getting caught. That's logical, isn't it? What would you have done? I wouldn't have killed him in the first place. If I really had to feed on a priest of all things, I would have at least left him with a smile on his face. What, you would have fucked him?
Rose slapped him hard.
What?
Damo put a hand to his stinging cheek. He looked at the passing crowd. Some eyes flickered their way, but no one stopped. They just flowed on by without giving them a second glance. To Rose, he said,
what am I supposed to think? That is the last thing you are supposed to think. What would your mother say? She'd have done the same thing as you, most likely. Look, it didn't mean any offence, but that's the phrase, isn't it? You know, leaving someone with a smile on their face means you're after fucking them. I have never heard this phrase, Rose snapped. But that's not my fault, is it?
Rose simmered for a few moments before saying,
I suppose this is true. I apologise.
Damo smiled.
Ah, no bother. I know I apologise for making an improper suggestion. But can I ask you what you meant then? You know,
leaving him in high spirits.
This seemed to cheer Rose. She walked back to him and smiled.
Well, it is probably easiest if I just show you. You are hungry, as am I, and it is time we fed.
She was about to start walking, but he stepped in her path.
Wait a minute, what do you mean?
Was I not clear? We go to feed, and I show you how you can do so in such a way as you don't arouse the attention of the police or the national media.
She tried to move, but he again shifted to block her.
Yeah, but I've been kind of hoping I wouldn't need to feed at all. I don't like this thing I've become. I want to go back to being normal.
Rose chuckled at his serious expression.
You joke, yes?
No, I'm fucking serious. I've spent the last couple of nights hiding from the sun, sleeping in shite hotel rooms and on underground trains, and then every night I'm waking up feeling like cold turkeys got me on the bleeding run. And the only way out of that feeling is to kill someone and feckin' drink their blood. Jesus, that's no way of life. I don't understand why you and Underwood want to go on living this way, but I sure as fuck do not.
Because we have no choice. This is our life. And now it is your life too. There is no going back to being normal, as you call it.
Damo's brow furrowed with lines of pain and disbelief.
But there must be. David Flinch said to Lydia something about how there must be a way back, a cure. I was hoping Underwood would know that he could help me become human again.
Rose laid a hand on his shoulder.
I am so sorry. He can do many things, but this is not one of them. It is hard, I know. Frightening also, but do not worry. Adapting can be very difficult at first, but trust me. Once you have a place to live and a system of feeding, sleeping and so on, you will be fine.
I don't!
Damo's voice trembled, suddenly on the verge of tears.
I don't want to be fine, Rose. I want to be human.
Seeing his pain, Rose stepped forwards and closed him in her arms.
I know, dear, but you are not alone. I am here.
She felt him put his arms around her and bury his face in her shoulder.
It's all right, she murmured in his ear. You are grieving for the loss of your own life. Vampirism is a terrible burden if you did not choose it.
I,
Damo said, not raising his face from her shoulder.
I want to see my mam, my dad, my sister, my mates. I don't want to fucking eat them. But I might, you know, when I'm hungry, when I get that blood lust on me. I can't help myself. Oh, Jesus, I'm so fucking scared, Rose.
She stroked his head.
That's all right. It's okay to be afraid. This is part of the grieving. But you will be able to see them again, and you won't want to hurt them. All you need is a system, and I can give you that. I can teach you just as Daniel taught me.
Damo sniffed and straightened up, wiping his tears on his sleeve.
Underwood, we should go and see him. Maybe he just never told you about a cure before because he wanted to keep you this way.
Rose shook her head.
Bless you, dear, but it is not so. I have been a vampire for a very long time. I've met many of my kind, and not one of them has ever heard of such a thing. Vampirism is a post-mortem condition. It comes after the death of human life. Death, you understand? The undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveller returns. You died, and this is the undiscovered country. There is no going back.
Damo looked horrified.
I died?
Yes, it is a kind of death. The heartbeat sinks to almost nothing. It cannot be felt or heard. Then, for the shortest time, it stops. We say now that your human life ends. Then the heart begins to beat again, still weak, undetectable, but slowly growing stronger. You are reborn, but you are not as you were.
And so that's how I ended up in the morgue.
She nodded.
But I'm still me. I'm not dead.
She smiled. And for this we can be grateful, yes?
No.
He turned away from her and joined the flow of passengers heading out towards the exit. Rose went after him, following at a distance, through the ticket barrier and across the outer passenger concourse. She expected him to look back for her, but he didn't. She watched him exit the station and went after him. The road outside was covered, a glass-roofed tunnel of pick-up and set-down traffic. Taxis, wet with rain, lined up along the side of the road and were doing a brisk trade. But Damo paid them no attention. He had his hood up and was walking away in the direction of the river. She cursed under her breath and went to the first taxi in the queue. She got in the back and told the driver to pursue Damo. When they caught up and the driver pulled in alongside him, she lowered the window and called to him.
"Excuse me."
He turned, saw her, and looked away again, walking on. Rose sighed and told the driver to stop and wait for her. She got out and caught up with Damo, catching him by the arm.
"Please, will you just wait and listen to me for a moment?"
He pulled his arm from her grip.
"Would you leave me alone, Rose? I just want to be alone." "Look, you must feed. You are cold. You have the stomach pains also. They will get worse." "I don't care. I'm not going to feed. Not tonight, not ever. Bollocks to it." "Don't be stupid. You act like a baby." "Oh, for fuck's sake, leave me alone. You were going to leave me earlier and I went after you. But now you can, all right? Just do us both a favour and feck off."
He turned and walked away. Rose rolled her eyes and took a deep breath before turning back to the driver and indicating he should wait. The driver nodded, and Rose went after Damo. He was walking past a row of commercial wheelie bins, and she seized him by the shoulder, shoving him in between the bins and pinning him up against the wall.
"Listen to me, fool. You must feed, or you will eventually lapse into a coma. Maybe you will be on a bus or a train. Maybe you will just drop down in the street. Someone will call an ambulance, and you will be taken to a hospital, and there you will be discovered. And you know what happens next?" "I don't know. Maybe David feckin' Attenborough will follow me around for the BBC's feckin' vampire special."
She bounced him against the wall.
"You think this is a joke? You won't be laughing when the OC you have you. You will be dead." "Fine by me, darling,"
Damo sneered.
"This is no life worth living anyway." "What do you know of this life? Nothing. You are reborn just a few nights and without a master. You have no idea of what you are or of what this life can be." "I know I've murdered 3 people, including my own girlfriend. I made her cut a fucking wrist open and she bled out all over the kitchen floor. And what was I doing when this was happening? Phoning an ambulance, maybe? No, I drank her fucking blood as it poured out of her. Drank it until she was lying dead beside me, same as I did the other two."
He tried to pull her hands from his shoulders, but she wouldn't let go.
That's not me, Rose. I can't be doing that shit. So bring on the feckin' coma. Bring on the Grim Reaper. Oh, please God, for fuck's sake, make him do a proper job of it this time."
When he had finished speaking, Rose said nothing, considering his words. Then she released him, though remained blocking his path.
"Tell me, what is your name? You still haven't told me this." "It's Damo. Damien Sullivan." "Damo Damien Sullivan. It is an unusual name." "No, it's just Damien Sullivan. But my mates call me Damo, you know? It's short for Damien."
Rose nodded.
"I see. Okay, Damien Sullivan. I know you are in pain. Physical, mental and emotional. But the way it has been for you so far is not the way it has to be. I can teach you a way to live without killing. I will give you a home and a future that can include your friends and family for as long as you like."
She smoothed the fabric of his hoodie at the shoulders where she'd pinned him. As you see, I have a taxi. I can take you somewhere warm and safe. You can get cleaned up, rest as long as you like, and feed without killing. You can do this, or you can do as your anger dictates. Walk away from me and die.
Damo looked over at the taxi. The driver was looking at something on his phone, uninterested in what he doubtless considered a couple of weirdos having a domestic tiff. Rose took his hand and said, "You are getting colder. How is the hunger?" Damo nodded. "Yeah, it's building, but it's not as bad as it was when I woke up in the morgue."
"It will get that way, Damien. It drove you to kill before, and it will do so again, no matter how much you try to control or reason with it. It's beyond your control, at least at this stage in your life. But again, with time..." He looked at her. She was watching his expression patiently.
"What are you, some kind of Yoda?"
She frowned.
"What is Yoda?"
"You know, Yoda, from Star Wars, like."
"Ah," she smiled. "This is a film. I have seen this, though a long time ago. Who is Yoda? A beautiful woman from another world? I suppose I must seem like this to you."
Damo gave a little laugh.
Yeah, I suppose you are."
"So," she said, giving his hand a gentle squeeze, "will you come with me?"
Damo scratched his head.
I dunno. Is odd fella coming and all? 'Cause I have to say, I'm not big on the rats."
Rose opened her coat and took the rat from her pocket. Lifting him close to her face, she spoke to him fondly.
"Odd fellow, my new friend is shy around you. I leave you here, okay?"
She then knelt and put him down where he ran under a bin. She got up, smiling.
"There, better?"
Damo couldn't hide his surprise.
"That was nicer, but really, I'm only kidding. I don't want you leaving your pet out here."
"Oh, please don't worry, he will be fine."
"Really?"
"Of course, he is a wild animal. He doesn't need me."
"Oh, so he is a sewer rat."
"Oh, you say sewer rat, I say brown rat. It is like the song, yes? You say tomato and I say tomato."
So now you will come, yes?"
Damo couldn't help thinking that maybe Rose was a little on the dotty side. But she was nice, and she seemed genuinely to want to help him.
"Ah, Jesus," he told himself. "What else would you be doing?"
She was right. He'd probably end up killing a homeless person under a bridge shortly before dawn and crawling down into the sewer for shelter. Oddfellow would probably be waiting there to meet him, laughing his rat arse off. The thought, grim though it was, brought a smile to Damo's face. He nodded.
"Yeah, I'll come. And, thanks, Rose."
Rose's face lit up.
"No, Damien, it is I who thank you. Come," she said, leading him by the hand from the bins. "Your chariot awaits. I now teach you your first lesson."
She walked over to the cab. The driver was still absorbed by his phone. She tapped on the passenger side window and he looked up. She indicated for him to wind down the window, which he did. Then she leaned closer and said something that Damo didn't catch. She then opened the rear passenger door and to Damo said,
"Get in beside him."
"What?
Get in?"
She nodded to the passenger door. Damo looked in through the front passenger window. The driver was looking back at him with a glassy-eyed expression that he now knew well. Rose got in the back and addressed the driver curtly.
"Let him in."
The driver obediently leaned across and opened the passenger door. Damo got in beside him. Then he heard Rose's voice coming through the taxi intercom.
"Now, take his wrist and bite it. Be careful not to spill any blood anywhere."
Damo's head swiveled between front and side windows. It was the main traffic approach to the station. The flow of cars, taxis and buses was almost constant. Pedestrians were fewer, but there were still plenty of them.
"Are you mental? People will see us."
"No one will see you if you are discreet."
"How do I bite a man in a London taxi outside Waterloo Station and be discreet about it?"
"Oh, it is easy. I do it all the time. No one will be looking at you. The car is not for hire, so we attract no attention. and even if they did, they won't know what you are doing. They probably think it is a private thing between you and the driver. Don't worry, he will be quite passive.
Rose, I can't. It's madness.
Of course you can. I do it all the time.
Well, bully for you, but I can't. He looked at the driver. I'll kill him.
No, you won't. I will guide you.
No. Damo shook his head and started looking for the door release. I don't trust myself. Rose's groan of exasperation sounded harsh through the little speaker.
Ugh, fine. I show you.
She tapped on the glass and the driver looked back to her eyes in the rearview mirror.
Driver, get in here with me.
Without a word, the driver opened his door, got out, and went to join Rose in the back of the cab. Once he was in beside her and the door was closed, she looked back to Damo, who was watching through the glass divide.
Well,
she said,
do you want to eat or don't you? Come on.
She beckoned for him to join her. Damo took another look around. Maybe she was right. London outside, the streaming flow of traffic and pedestrians, was paying them no attention whatsoever. He got out of the front seat and joined her in the back, so the taxi driver was sitting between them. Now, she said, you see he sits here like the shop dummy. I have fascinated him.
You've what?
Fascinated him. He is now in my power. His will is mine to command.
Ah, yeah, I've done this, said Damo. I've been able to do it since I woke up in the morgue.
Good, yes, it is not a difficult thing for us to do. However, you have some things to learn about feeding. Someone knocked on the glass of the front passenger window.
Go away! Shouted Rose. Lunch break!
The knocking hand gave a wave of acknowledgement and was gone. You see, said Rose, even taxi drivers have to eat. People understand this.
Yeah, but this one's not so much eating as being eaten. I don't think they'd understand that so easily.
Rose laughed.
Ha ha! Oh, you are funny. I do like you, Damien. Here.
She took the driver's arm and pulled back his sleeve to expose his wrist.
You don't need to go deep. The veins are close to the skin. A light bite. Yes? Then close your mouth over the wound and feed.
Oh, wait a minute, he said, holding up a hand. Just so's to be clear, we're not going to kill him, right? She gave a nod.
This is so.
And you're going to guide me? She nodded again.
Yes. Why do you wait? Do you want me to get him started for you?
No, I can do it.
Good.
She handed him the driver's arm. The driver, a mustachioed man in his 50s, turned to Rose. She smiled at him.
You are a lucky boy, aren't you?
The driver smiled and said,
Yeah, lucky boy.
Rose gave Damo a nod.
Okay, go ahead.
Damo took the man's arm and looked down at the exposed skin. As he focused his senses, the sound of the traffic began to die away, and the beat of the man's pulse rose slowly to his ears. The veins began to reveal themselves, radiating their heat, almost glowing before his eyes. Then instinct took over. He raised the arm to his lips, feeling the coursing heat through the thin layer of skin, and bit down. Blood flowed into his mouth, and he began to drink. Rose let him drink for about 30 seconds, then said,
Good, Damien. You feel better now?
Damo said nothing. He continued to drink, lost in the blood. Rose sighed and rapped her knuckles gently on his head.
Hello in there, Damien. Can you hear me?
Damo looked up.
What?
The bleeding arm immediately began to splash and splatter drops of blood onto him.
Ugh!
Rose snatched the arm away and put it to her lips. She took a mouthful of blood for herself, then summoned the thicker saliva to her mouth and licked it over the wound. The bleeding stopped. She took the man's wrist from her mouth, and on contact with the air, the wound began to bubble and smoke, as if she had drizzled it with acid. Damo's eyes widened in astonishment.
What are you doing there? I close the wound.
You can do that?
You can do that. You don't have to kill everyone you bite. You can just snack on them. So,
she wiped the bloody saliva from the driver's wrist and showed Damo the skin beneath. You see, he is as good as new. Damo stared at the skin. Two faint pink marks were all that remained of the wound.
That's amazing. But what about these marks?
They fade quickly, said Rose. But it is important to remember the wound will only close on living victims. Obviously, if the body is dead, it cannot heal.
She checked the back seat for bloodstains. This is good. You have only spilled the blood on your jeans. Getting it on the seat would have meant cleaning up, but thankfully we are spared the chore. She touched Damo's cheek and smiled to feel some warmth had returned to his skin.
Good. You are warmer. You feel better, yes?
Yeah, much better, thanks. So, what happens to this guy now?
Rose pulled the driver's sleeve back down over his wrist.
Well, now that he has fed us, he will drive us to my home, where both of us can have a more fulfilling meal.
And he'll be all right. There's not going to be any, like, you know, side effects or anything.
No, he will be fine. A little light-headed, perhaps, but nothing to worry about.
Damo grinned.
Maybe we should give him a cup of tea and a biscuit.
His suggestion puzzled Rose.
What?
You know, it's what they do when you give blood.
Rose didn't know. She frowned.
You want to give the driver a biscuit?
No, it was a joke.
Oh, yes, she chuckled.
You are always with the jokes, Damien. I like that about you.
She leaned over the driver and patted Damo's thigh.
I think you and I are going to be great friends.
Has the fledgling found his master? Can Rose be to Damo what Underwood was to her? Not that that worked out too well. And talking of Underwood, could Damo be right? Could Underwood be the killer behind the body in the skip? Surely not, for as we know, he's dead. But if not Underwood, then who? All will be revealed in time. So join me next time for episode 11 of Underwood and Flinch Underground. The music you're listening to is Ahmad Armor by Farid Farjad, courtesy of Taraneh Records, specialists in Persian music. Visit their website at taranehrecords.com. Sale links for the song can be found there, and of course at my websites, mikebennettauthor.com and underwoodandflinch.com. Well, 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 patrons. The mists of mystery swirl about this story like, well, mists. I'm sure some of you have your theories as to what the devil's going on. I think it was Colonel Mustard in the library with the lead piping, and so on. Actually, I was playing that the other day for the first time in decades. I've an old British set from the 70s with all the proper character cards, you know. Ah, Miss Scarlet. So cold, so aloof, so beguiling. Oh, be still, my 8-year-old heart. Of course, in the UK we call the game Cluedo, but in the US it's called Clue. Why they changed it, I have no idea. Personally, I prefer Cluedo, but then of course I would. There's an interesting story about the creator of the game. He sold the copyright for peanuts, while Waddington's, the company that bought it, went on to franchise it worldwide and make millions. Isn't that so often the way? It was Waddington's, in the boardroom, with the fountain pen, that did the foul deed. Anyway, moving on. Now, some of you, indeed many of you, may know my fellow podcast author, John Miro. John is the sci-fi fantasy author and podcaster of the Serving World stories, and he, like me, is on Patreon. If you haven't heard John's podcast, then do give them a listen. And if you like them and would like to see them continue, then hey, why not support him here on Patreon as well? Would you like a taster? All right, here you go.
The flames, the past's greatest secret, the key to a future where fleets voyage lifetimes to bring flames to new worlds, bringing distant stars only a few brave steps away. The key to the flames is the ferryman who emerge as young and strong as when first the flames kissed them. May the ferryman take you, lest you be lost forever. Walk the Fire, a shared world created by John Miro, burning bright with many other authors and narrators.
John
Learn
Miro
more
there,
at servingworlds.com.
Just one of the stories to come out of that great sci-fi mind of his. Check him out at servingworlds.com and here on Patreon. You won't regret it. Okay, that's it for me for now. I'll be back next with the next episode of A Christmas Carol. And, as I mentioned earlier, I'll also be back at the weekend with something for the weekend. What will it be? I don't know. Something. Hence the title.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
And so, for me, from this particular podcast, until the moon rises again over Underwood and Flinch, farewell. This podcast has been brought to you today by you. Yes, you, and all my other sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on, be it on paper or on podcast, is as a result of your contribution.
Yeah! Woo! Yeah!
I did a mini fist pump there, but obviously you couldn't see it.